Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Matt here. No need to be alarmed, just a quick technical announcement. For the first few minutes of this episode, you may ask yourself, Matt, why do you sound muffled, like you're behind a gigantic pillow fort? Well, that's a good question, and unfortunately, I can't answer it. I did try to fix the problem, but I couldn't make it sound any better as I got my degree in musical theater, not audio production. So all I can tell you is that around that 6 minute mark, the pillow fort will be destroyed and my normal voice will be clear. So just bear with it and enjoy the second episode of Broadway Breakdown.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, everybody. This is John Wascavage.
And this is Matt Koplik.
And we're...
God, I thought you were going to do it with me. Fuck, okay.
No,
one,
let's do it.
Two, three.
Broadway breakdown. Oh my God, that was so not synced at all. Oh
not
dear God. Anywhoozlebees. Hey guys, so this is our second episode. What a treat it was to be able to, as a narcissist, go back and listen to our first episode last week. What do you think about that, Matt?
Oh, I didn't realize I said like as often as I did, or as often as I did.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was like, so one of the first things I wanted to do today, and if we could please cue in some really dramatic, sad music at this moment, I would just like to take this time to personally apologize for my use of the word like and how many times I said like, and to promise that from now on, I will not say like as many times as I did in that first episode. I would also like to take this moment to talk about Squarespace. No, I would also like to take a moment to talk about my use of the word disconcerting, which is not a word. It's disconcerting. I literally heard me say that and I was like, oh my God. Oh my God, I just said the wrong word. Honestly, kids, just, I guess what I'm really trying to say here is do not study theater. Study something real. Study something that's going to teach you that disconcerting is not a real word. So, okay, cut out sad music. Yeah, no, it was so cool to go and listen to that first episode and to be like, oh, not gonna do that. Oh, that's fun. So thank you for everyone who listened. A lot of people were sending me like Snapchats of them listening to us in their car while they were driving, and I was thinking, hey, that's really cool. And once again, like, you know, we're just two gals with a dream here. And so bear with us as we in these first few episodes do get our groundings and as we shake the likes out of our system. Yeah, I promise we'll be more interesting.
Well, we are interesting. We just got to get reined in. A side note, social experiment today. I am timing us on each segment to see just how much we can cram into a designated amount of time. But we shall see. Anyway, let's move along.
And to tie back into last week with cramming in to see how much we can cram in. People liked the Sondheim glory hole. So
they liked the Sondheim glory hole. They like Sondheim cramming in side of both of us all the time, every day.
We
how is it?
We signed a contract not to talk about that, so...
I didn't get to sign a contract. I just simply escaped.
Yeah, it's like a SAG waiver. Like, it's like an equity, like, showcase waiver contract, so...
The developmental lab. You,
it's experiment. It's a developmental lab. You don't get 1% of the proceedings, but you do get...
You get a flat rate. Shame. Yeah, you get a flat rate up front. 100% shame. So, I would like to quickly point out, John, what are you reading these days?
I am reading Harry Potter at the ripe young age of 29. I wasn't allowed to read it as a kid because my church literally thought it was the devil. Like, we would have sermons about how witchcraft was overtaking the world, which, you know, is another reason why I'm in therapy. But, So I wasn't allowed to read it as a kid. Like, we were literally, like, told, like, if there were two things that were super taboo when I was a kid, it was the Spice Girls and it was Harry Potter. So now you better believe that as I am adult gay male, I wake up every morning to wannabe spice up your life, and then I open up that Harry Potter, and let me tell you, what a joy it is. I see why it's become a phenomenon.
Just you wait, queen. Like... The first three books are great, but, like, the fourth one is when shit gets real. It is just too good.
It is interesting going on and reading these books for the first time now after, like, the whole, like, it wasn't even until, like, the seventh book, or it wasn't even afterwards that J.K. Rowling came out and said that Dumbledore was gay. It is interesting now going and reading this book for the first time and reading lines like, Dumbledore had a twinkle in his eye, or, like, an extra special laugh, or, like, he blushed at this moment. And I was like, ooh! She's a queen. She was always a queen. But I'm so excited for June.
On that note, John, on that note, my timer has gone off.
Oh, motherfucker. Oh.
We talking about Dumbledore's homosexuality, I mean, that I could go on for ages and ages. And I must say, wait till you get to book 7, because that's when you're like, whoo!
I just can't wait for Jude Law to play Dumbledore in the next series of the movies, because honestly, like, hello.
Oh my God. It's like going to be the talented Mr. Ripley, but even more violent. Can't wait.
Yes, thank God.
Cannot wait.
All right.
So now...
On to business, on to things that have to do with theater.
Theater. Well, actually, it's a good transition because my week in review, last night I went to see the National Theater broadcast of Angels in America.
One of my favorite comedies, honestly.
And such a sensible 90 minutes, too. I mean, like, get in and out, you know what I mean?
In and out, door slam and farce. So good.
So many doors. It is a very funny play. That's one of the things that actually I had an issue with this production. So let me do a quick review of Angels in America. For those of you who don't know, because believe it or not, we will talk about plays on this podcast from time to time. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Angels in America is the multi-Tony winning, Pulitzer Prize winning, every award winning play by Tony Kushner. It's two parts. Part one is Millennium Approaches. Part two is Perestroika. They both premiered on Broadway about 9 months apart and then were played in rep, so they each won the Best Play Tony Award. There is debate over which is the better play, whether you should do both, whether just one or the other. It was commissioned by Oscar Eustace and the Eureka Theater Company, which was a nonprofit company in San Francisco. They were very upset because they wanted the regional rights to The Normal Heart, which was the first, like, mainstream play to deal with the AIDS crisis. And they didn't get it. I think they lost it to Berkeley Rep, and they literally said to Tony Kushner, write us an AIDS play. And so, yeah, like, of course, I'll do that for you. And Tony Kushner wrote it. It took him, like, 7 years to write Millennium Approaches. He just kept on blowing past deadlines.
It makes sense that it took 7 years to write because it takes 7 years to watch. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's just what it is.
But it also, like, it technically wrote him only 10 days, took him 10 days to write the first draft of Perestroika, and the first draft was 700 pages, and now it's probably a sensible 400 pages.
Oh my goodness, I didn't know that.
You know, it's crazy, but, like, it blew up there, but the Eureka was such a small theater company, they couldn't handle the demands of the show, because it's a big show. It's a lot of flying, a lot of sets. It's not a huge cast, but it requires a lot of the cast, and then it went to the National Theater in London, and then it went to the Mark Taper, went back to the National, and then it came to Broadway in 1993, blew up, young Marcia Gay Harden was in the cast,
and Joe Mantello before he was Tony winning director. Joe Mantello was Lewis.
Right.
And yeah, it is a brilliant, brilliant play. Both of them are brilliant plays, but part one is probably a little better structured. Part two is mm-hmm. a little messier, but I also find part two to have a bit more emotional thrill to it. And I never get like profoundly moved during part one. Cause part one, and Tony Kushner basically has said this, that it's all set up for Perestroika. Like the reason why it became a two-parter was because he was trying to write and get all the characters to change by the end of the play. And it just wasn't happening fast enough mm-hmm. to his liking. So part one is basically getting everything in motion for the chaos of part two, which I love. So first of all, what was your introduction to Angels in America?
I believe the first time I read it was in college, and then I I've actually never seen it performed live, which is I really want to. But then I watched the HBO miniseries with it, with, I mean, just a bunch of hack actors.
I've never heard of any of them.
Called Meryl Streep. I mean, I loved that. But I think I would have a different opinion if I had seen it on stage ever. But
the movie was my first introduction to it too. I saw it when it aired on HBO because I have very progressive parents who let me read Harry Potter and watch Angels in America at the age of 13. But I got the play. I eventually got the full play after the movie came out. And then I saw it mm-hmm. at the Signature, where it had Christian Borle and, what's his name? Zachary Quinto?
Quinto? Zachary how do you pronounce Quinto.
It? Zachary Quinto, Quinto. Yeah.
Zachary Quintanilla. Zachary Quintanilla.
I never actors. Know. It's pronounced so many different ways in like all the interviews, so I never knew. Point aside, I eventually found on YouTube, someone posted like 40 minutes of clips for a reviewer's reel of the original Broadway production of Angels in America, which if you haven't seen it, yeah, go online, just look up like Angels in America Broadway or 1993, whatever. But it's, you'd be surprised at just how funny it is, because the miniseries, for all of its wonderfulness, is a very somber take on the piece. Mm-hmm. Justin Kirk, who plays Pryor,
love him,
is a very kind of composed, and Justin Kirk is a heterosexual man, so he does mm-hmm. play, he doesn't play up the campiness of the role that I didn't realize was there until I watched Steven Spinella in just, you know, in what is essentially maybe 15 minutes of his entire 7-hour performance, but you get the idea of this grandeur, this theatricality in Pryor.
These pills you keep alluding to.
Valium! I take Valium! Lots of Valium!
And you're dancing as fast as you can.
I'm not addicted. I don't believe in addiction. And I never drink and I never take drugs.
Well, smell you, Nancy Drew.
Except Valium.
Except Valium in wee fistfuls.
It's terrible. Mormons are not supposed to be addicted to anything. I'm a Mormon.
I'm a homosexual.
Oh. In my church, we don't believe in homosexuals.
In my church, we don't believe in Mormons.
These pills you keep alluding to.
Valium. I take Valium. Lots of Valium.
And you're dancing as fast as you can.
I'm not addicted. I don't believe in addiction. And I never... Well, I never drink and I never take drugs.
Well, smell you, Nancy Drew.
Except Valium.
Except Valium and wee fistfuls.
It's terrible. Mormons are not supposed to be addicted to anything. I'm a Mormon.
I'm a homosexual.
Oh. My church, we don't believe in homosexuals.
In my church, we don't believe in Mormons.
It isn't campiness, but it's not campiness. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's so interesting that, I mean, just to draw a comparison in to Justin Kirk, a heterosexual male playing one of the most, I'd say, I mean, in modern drama, a complex gay character. We have Andrew Garfield in another straight man, although he is quote unquote gay minus the actual act, which like queen, you do not get to own that. Love you. Love all about you. I hate Mondays too, Andrew Garfield, but no.
Oh my God.
No.
Oh, Jack Horseman reference. No. I think was just, he tried to make a joke and it was stupid. But
I think so too.
Yeah,
but
it's
like,
actually
leave
funny.
The jokes
I'm glad
to
you
the
said
homosexuals,
that,
Andrew Garfield. Like, come
I'm,
on.
But I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was something that I noticed as I was watching it, was Andrew Garfield, he's not wrong in his interpretation. Like, it's the right approach he's doing. He's trying to go more in the Steven Spinella mold of flamboyant theatricality. Mm-hmm. But he starts off too big and starts off too angry. Like, it's very broad strokes, I found, with Andrew Garfield. He actually got better as the play goes on. And Prior Walter, who we in his very first scene we're introduced, he has AIDS. Mm-hmm. As the sickness sort of overcomes him, that's when Andrew Garfield gets actually a lot better. But yeah, and I just watched a 5-minute clip of a scene from Angels in America at the National, from when the National Theater did like a big presentation of all the shows they've done in the last like 50 years in their anniversary concert, and it was Dominic Cooper and I forget his name.
Oh, from History Boys.
Yeah, and then the guy who played Moriarty in Sherlock. What's it's like Adam something.
Wait, was he also in one of the James Bond movies?
Maybe.
He was actually gay?
Yeah, he is actually gay. And what's funny is that I watched their clip, and this guy played Prior, and it's this park bench scene where they talk about little Sheba, and he announces he has AIDS. And, you know, he does go a little big from time to time in the way that the Brits kind of really love their overpowering emotions. But even from the get-go, I was like, oh, like, no, this guy gets it. And I checked him out, because I was like, I want to know if, like, is he gay or straight? And he is gay. He is gay. And it's, Prior is one of those weird roles where it doesn't have to be played by a gay man, but you can almost always tell when a straight man is playing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you can't really channel that kind of role unless you are gay, because there is a lot going on there. There is a proud flamboyancy to him that isn't a cartoon. And you have to find that right line, and you have to kind of know people or be that kind of person and be in that world to really inhabit it. And Andrew Garfield definitely tries, but I don't think he succeeded overall. I honestly don't think a lot of the production and that this broadcast did succeeded overall. Surprisingly, you want to know who came off best? Was Nathan Lane. And I didn't think he would.
Really? That's so interesting, because a few people have said that. And I remember when I first heard that casting choice, I mean, I literally, like, my head spun around 3 times, and I was like, okay, sure. I mean, not that I would never call Nathan Lane an actor who is not capable of doing things. It's just, I never would have pictured him in that role in a million years, and people say he is outstanding, and I'm here for it. I'm there. Like, I can't wait to see it.
You wanna know what it is, though? It's like, I feel like we, as audience members, now expect all of our musical theater actors and Broadway stage actors in general, we expect them to be chameleons and just super versatile and be able to do everything. Yeah. And there are some actors who are versatile, but not in terms of changing their voice and their appearance. They can sort of bring themselves to every role and it works. Mm. And I think the film actress who I thought was sort of the master of that of the 90s was Julia Roberts, who like can't really play anything but herself, but was sort of able for a while, Julia Roberts, this little unknown indie actress. I just feel like a lot in the 90s, a lot of her movies, she's sort of always playing herself, but it's different shades of herself. Mm-hmm. And so she was able to bring a lot of who she was to many different kinds of roles and different kinds of movies. And Nathan Lane is actually really good at doing that as well. Mm. And so he doesn't go for a Roy Cohn imitation. He doesn't really change his voice that much. But it's, I don't know, it's the searing specificity that he has. That's actually really good alliteration.
I was going to say, what a great, you should write a review that's just those two words. Nathan Lane and Angels in America, searing specificity. Period.
I think I've got a career ahead of me here. Searing specificity. Maybe that should be the name of this podcast, Searing Specificity.
I don't think anyone would call anything we've done so far specific, so...
Very dear you. We are very specific with our Sondheim anal jokes. I think that just, you know,
we're very we're very neat.
Like right, like Sondheim, we go for the jugular.
No, he goes for the prostate, but it's
you can go for both.
Okay, back to Angels in America.
It's all one and the same, really. And we only got five and a half minutes left. But the director of it was Marianne Elliott, who most people would remember. She directed Curious Incident. She co-directed War Horse. Mm-hmm. She's actually about to direct a production of Company that we'll get to in a second. And it is a very big production. It's at the Littleton stage at the National. Littleton is a stage that does both big epic dramas and pretty large scale musicals. And it's a great theater because it's actually very intimate. It's only like 700 seats, which, to give you Broadway people a frame of reference, think of like the Walter Kerr where Angels in America originated. That has 950 seats. So the Littleton is 250 less than that. It actually has fewer seats than the Golden Theater, which is one of the smaller ones on Broadway. But it has a really wide stage. So even at like the furthest back, you're like 10 rows away from the stage. And I would say the grandeur of the stage is great in some ways, because Angels in America is an epic and it has a lot of theatrical spectacle to it. But it is not, it's not a War Horse and it's not a Coast of Utopia where you have like 90 people on stage. Although weirdly, this production did have like kind of an ensemble.
People
playing extras, and then they dress up in black and they lift up the angel, which I was very upset about, because the whole point of the end of Millennium Approaches is that she literally crashes through the ceiling, and she didn't do it. She like rose from the floor, and I was like, bitch, she crashes through the motherfucking ceiling. Give a bitch her due. Yeah, and they like had this big moment where they took the entire set towards the end of the show and they moved it to the back of the stage. So there was this big open playing field and it was really cool to look at. And I was like trying to think about what Marianne Elliott was going for. And I think she was literally trying to show history cracking wide open, but I was sitting there going, I don't know, Marianne Elliott and your two Tony Awards, it seems a little on the nose, but I'll let her have it. I think it's supposed to transfer here sometime next year, and I'm sure it'll go into a smaller theater. We don't have any theaters like the Littleton here, so I'm sure it'll be on a smaller stage, and I think that'll help. But one of the things that this production also did was they sort of had an in-between of the original Broadway and the movie, where it took itself very seriously, but they did allow for some camp. But it felt a little almost at odds. James Lapine, who wrote Into the Woods and Sunday at the Park with George and directed those productions too, he said to his company when they were doing Into the Woods for the first time, in Act 1 they have to find the drama and the humor, and in Act 2 they have to find the humor and the drama. And I think that's such a great note, because you never want to camp up the laughs. You never want to make it seem like you're expecting it. The point of laughter in theater is like the comedy has to seem real to the characters, obviously. But you also don't want to get too morbid, because then you're going to close your audience off, because then it just becomes theatrical Robitussin. Like, it's good for you, but no one wants to watch it.
Are you a homosexual?
Oh, is it that obvious? Yes, I am. What's it to you?
Would you say you were a typical homosexual?
Me? Oh, I'm stereotypical. What? You mean like... am I a hairdresser?
Are you a hairdresser?
Well, it would be your lucky day if I was. I'm sick.
It's expensive. Oh, shit. Now I won't be able to stop. Now it's started.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. So, you said you've never seen a theatrical production of Angels, but you've only seen the movie. Looking back, do you sort of see what I'm getting at, though, about it sort of being kind of somber?
I do. I definitely remember watching the movie and thinking, like, oh, this is emotional. Like, it's... And so much so that, like, everything from like the color scheme to the delivery of the moments was very somber and very serious. And I think an important part of being a gay person is our ability to find the joy in tragedy. And I think that's so prevalent in Angels in America. I really want to see, of course I want to see this production. I'm very excited for when it comes to New York. I will say my one connection to this production is that when I was in London in May, after we saw an immersive production of Alice in Wonderland, some friends and I, the director of that production took us to the National Theater, and we walked in, and sitting at a table was the whole cast of Angels in America, sans Nathan Lane, and literally I spent most of that time using the secret, the idea of the secret to will Andrew Garfield and Russell Tovey, whatever
Tovey,
his name
I think
is,
it is,
to kiss. Like, I was just like, just get drunk enough so that you guys kiss.
Oh my
kiss.
God.
Please. That would have been... Like, I just want that to happen. I mean, like, come on, Andrew. You're gay enough, apparently.
He's gay enough.
So
and kissing's not quite sex. But do you ever go on Russell Tovey's Instagram? It's just like him and his dog, and it gets me pregnant every time.
I was going to say, if your question is, do I ever go on that Instagram, I guess my answer would have to be, like, I'm on it literally right now. Like, I spend most of my waking free moments scrolling through and just clicking, like, re-clicking like on the photos of his beautiful dog and his beautiful face and just being like, why can't I have you? It borders on obsessive, but I think it also borders on adorable. Like, I think I'm
quirky,
being
adorable.
So cute. And
you're like...
I think if he ever met me... And if he found out how obsessed I am with his, like, face, he would definitely not call the cops. He would definitely be like, we should get married. And...
Yeah, it's a Sleepless in Seattle situation. Yeah. You are Meg Ryan with the overcoat.
Once again, here I am living my life as Meg Ryan. And
it's not the worst.
I'm okay with that.
It's not the worst thing. And, you know, I mean.
I've never seen Sleepless in Seattle, though. I know. Put a dramatic sound cue right there.
Bum, bum, bum. Oh, my God.
No, I know. That's the other part of growing up in my, like, home life. I wasn't allowed to watch, like, a lot of movies, too. So, like, a lot of times people are like, oh, have you seen this? Have you seen that? And I'm like, no, I haven't.
I need to, like, give you a Meg Ryan, Winona Ryder, like, movie week.
I like Winona Ryder. As an adult, I watched, like, Girl Interrupted. I know she's done more than that, but, like, that was good enough for me.
You know what? You would actually really like Mermaids. I feel like you'd
mermaids?
Connect with that. We'll talk. It's Winona Ryder, Cher, and a super, super young Christina Ricci.
Oh.
I know.
I loved her in Casper. I was allowed to watch Casper as a kid, and I definitely had, like, spring awakenings in my basement for that Casper actress, actor as a child.
Actor.
I was like, he was so beautiful.
Let's just take
a moment of silence.
let's take a moment of silence for young actor Casper, who I'm pretty sure was like 14 when they made that. So it's a little weird to be lusting after him now.
No, it's not. I still think of him as how I thought of him when I was like a 7-year-old, and I wanted to bang him. No, I'm just kidding.
But you're like, that's how the beginning of the book Lolita starts, is the main character is like, I was in love with a 9-year-old when I was 9, and I've been in love with 9-year-olds ever since. So, quoting the book, not me speaking my truth.
I had no idea what Lolita was about, but...
Lolita? Yeah. God damn it, woman. Lolita's a book about a pedophile. That's all you need to know. It's very famous. Anywho, so Angels in America, Marianne Elliott directed it. She's about to direct a production of Company that's become very controversial. And to lead us into that is Mr. John.
Yeah, so basically, they have now had Sondheim's approval. Well, I guess they've gotten his approval a while ago, but now he's speaking more of it. That in London, they will be reviving a production of Company where the character of Bobby will now be called Bobby. Could you tell from my inflection how the spelling was different? How it went from B-O-B-B-Y to B-O-B-B-I-E. Could you do that? Was I a good enough actor to do that?
Cool.
Your silence speaks volumes. So anyways, so basically they have decided they they're changing the lyrics to a lot of the song. So instead of have I got a girl for you, it's have I got a guy for you. And they will be performing company with a 35-year-old single female New Yorker. And like they've changed things. Like, so instead of the flight attendant, what the hell is an attainment? I'll show you. A flight attendant being named April, they've changed his name to Andy. And I honestly, I'm here for this. I have my popcorn out. I'm ready. I think it's an amazing idea. I think the show has been shrouded in questions for years about whether or not Bobby is gay. Why is he single at this age? You know, like a lot of different things of like, what is really going on here? And I think they've like flipped it on its head so many different times. And I think the idea of flipping it on its gender and having a female take on the role, it's going to be really beautiful and really empowering, because I think hopefully what will happen is that we will realize how, like, once again, we will be able to study how similar genders are and how it's a construct and how we deal with these kind of issues the same way. We all don't want to be alone. We all want to feel alive. That's the song, right? Feeling alive. That's
feeling,
the final.
Yeah. Feeling human, something like that.
Feeling alive. The finale of the show. I have high hopes for this production.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting idea. And I'm not always one for gender bending. Not that I'm opposed. I'm not opposed to the idea in general. I sometimes think that it's done for the sake of whatever. The most recent revival of On a Clear Day You Can See Forever, I think, is an example of gender bending a role for the sake of gender bending, not because it actually adds anything to it. This, I think, is an interesting idea because part of the crux of Company when it opened in 1970 was when you were a man and you were 35 and you weren't married, something was sort of perceived wrong with you, or, you know, why are you evading marriage? And in the last 47 years, men can be bachelors much, much longer and later in life and not have anything really questioned about them. But it's not the same for women.
I think it's going to be super informative to the role, because I do think that sometimes as a society we allow, not that we allow, we when you're a male actor, there's a certain amount of vulnerability I almost feel sometimes that people don't want to see. Maybe, am I wrong in that? I feel like, and maybe it's just because I'm a gay man, and so whenever I play like a straight man, I feel like people think that I'm too emotional. But I think that there's a depth to female vulnerability that men have trouble tapping into. Listen, Rosalie Craig, I know you're listening to this. I know your Bobby's going to be amazing. Break legs. I'll see you opening night. I can't wait.
She has her vote of confidence, and that's all she needs.
She does. She's been praying for it, and God answers prayers.
You know, I think that's a good time as any to move on to our next segment. Do you?
Yeah, I think that's great.
Great. So something we want to kind of bring back around from last week is our infamous equity breakdown foot fetishist. John has done a little more snooping lately. He's really kind of keeping into that serial element.
Yes.
And what have you uncovered? Because I know nothing. I don't know what you've uncovered, so I'm excited to hear.
Yeah, so basically, I'm the Sarah Koenig of foot fetishism. I'm here to bring you one story every week about a foot fetishist who's posting breakdowns on actors' websites. So I went on one of my many really informative secret websites, and this one specifically is called Audition Update. So I spent a good amount of time because I could not find, you know, a lot of breakdowns for that are looking for roles. And for people who forgot what we're talking about, we began talking last week about a man who posts every few months on acting websites looking for male actors, quote unquote, to audition for a project that the more you read about, the creepier it gets. And then slowly, after years of being an actor and seeing these, I've definitely put together that he is a foot fetishist, and he is exploiting young actors to basically create foot fetish porn, or for his own benefit, to have these actors send him a picture of his feet, or to come in to an audition room and bare their feet in kink-ish ways, I guess would be the best way to put. And not that I am at all saying that, like, people should not have their kinks, or that I'm not foot fetish shaming anyone. I am, however,
Did you say foot fetish shaming?
Yeah, foot fetish shaming. Yeah.
That's brilliant. Continue.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, pearls of wisdom drip from my tongue. So I do have a problem with this man doing this, because I think as actors, we are already required a lot from ourselves without having a foot fetishist trying to take advantage of us. So I have done some research, and a lot of the ads expire on these websites after a certain amount of weeks. And so I could not, for the life of me, find any of these posts. However, I did, on Audition Update, find out his name. So basically, for also those of you who don't know what Audition Update is, it is a forum, an anonymous online forum for actors where they can go and post things about auditions where, like, I have a callback for this, or, like, they're looking for this, or, like, appointments tomorrow are for this, blah, 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 blah. Basically, it is where dreams go to die. But in this case, I found out some information. So from what I can tell, no one has ever actually, like, filmed anything with him. So what someone posted, first off, we have a name for this man. This man, his name is Tony D'Alessandro. And so, there it is. This is our man. And so basically, he is doing these paid test shoots in NYC. And it's true. Like, normally in a lot of the auditions, it's like, you will get paid to audition. And like, number one, your ear should perk up then and be like, what is that? So this person who, on this anonymous online forum, my key into this person, my deep throat, if you will, his name is I Am Batman, who posted this. So he said that Tony D'Alessandro mails that this guy / this company, quote unquote, is looking to film guys for film foot fetish porn. I've seen examples of what they're looking for and looking to create, and it's pretty intense, i.e. full nudity, bondage, foot feeding, which I have no idea what that is, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so then, of course, this I Am Batman person was like, if you're into that, go for it. But, like, be careful to what you're applying for or before sending any pictures to them. Because it's true. Like, if you send a picture to these people, they could technically use it. So I then went online to try to find anything about this person. And I was having a hard time finding anything until I stumbled upon his blog. And only two posts right now on the blog. One is of examples of his work. And the other is kind of a little, like, breakdown of what he says that he's doing. So, according to Tony's bio, Tony started taking photos in 2000 for Men's Magazine, shooting male nudes and body shots. So I'm guessing this Men's Magazine was, like, super tasteful, you know, something like the Equity newsletter. So he is a writer and has an interest in photography since age 6. He also shoots creative videos from time to time for his video reel. He freelances mainly and takes pictures as a hobby, blah, 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 born and raised in NYC, blah, 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 blah. He's always looking for models, blah, 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 blah. It says that he's in the process of building a more professional website, but to feel free to look at any of his work. And so I did. And the first picture on his blog is of a picture of a man with his head being, like, held back by his hair as this man is untying a black dress shoe with his teeth. It's... And as you scroll down, there are pictures of people holding, like, cherries in between their toes as, like, people are about to, like, eat them. What I didn't expect is that there are...
Would that be foot feeding, then, I guess? The cherries?
Oh, I guess. Oh, my God. You know, sometimes the most obvious thing is staring at you in the face and you just don't even see it. And it's waving back at you. And that's just what happened with foot feeding. But then the thing that is intriguing me, which is what I want to, in my serial way, come back next week, is I want to find more about it. Because then at the bottom of the website, there are photos from what seems like a real production of a foot fetish, like, on stage. Like, it's definitely in a black box. There are definitely those, like, black theater cubes, and there's definitely stage lighting. Like, they're sitting on those black theater cubes. So, there were foot fetish... there was a production. So, join us next week when I look into Tony D'Alessandro's foot fetish production. Guys, I don't know if anyone else finds this as interesting as I do, but honestly, I feel... This half enrages me, half titillates me because I find it so hysterical. And I guess now it makes me hungry. Like, now that I know what foot feeding is, I'm like, yeah, I know I can kind of go for a strawberry.
I mean, try it out on yourself first. Foot feed yourself before you foot feed others.
Once again, I'm not stomping on anyone's kink. Like, please, like, if you are into that, be into it.
No, we are not fetish shaming, but we're just saying don't take advantage of other. Don't trick people into your fetish. Be open and say this is what I like,
yes,
and
have them
then sign a developmental lab contract with you while they lock you in their basement.
Do not trick some, like, little twink from Boko named, like, Sean into. I don't know why Sean's the twink.
I'll say, like,
I don't know.
Landon, something like that.
Landon, that's it. Oh, it was on the tip of my tongue.
That's what Landon said after he worked with this guy.
I know. I was trying to think. I was like, I don't want to objectify Landon anymore, but do not trick Landon into your foot fetish porn. So that is the moral. If that should be the title of this week's episode. Do not trick Landon into your foot fetish porn. So, guys, join us next week. I want to find out more. The more I'm uncovering about this, the more interesting I'm finding it. And if none of you find it interesting,
listen to Seth Rudetsky. He doesn't talk about this.
I support. I'm the Seth Rudetsky of foot fetish porn. No, honestly, thank you for listening and for. Thank you, even Matt, for allowing me to delve deeper into this weird ass tangent.
Listen, you let me unveil all of my, like, ninth grade Angels in America thoughts on you, so thank you.
I do love that you, like, offer up, like, actual information about Angels in America, and I'm like, hey, you guys, I went on an audition update. I found my reliable source is the screen name user I Am Batman. I found shit on a blog.
But you want to know what's really stupid is that, like, your thing is probably what's going to get us more listeners. They're going to be like, I want to know more about the foot fetish guy. What's that? Angels in America history? Get out of here.
Here's the thing. I think it's just because I have a beautiful, buttery voice. I have such a voice and a face for podcasts.
How very
people
dare
are just
you.
People are just going to hear this luscious voice and want to listen more.
Whatever.
About this foot fetish.
I have the legs for a podcast, so it's fine.
I'm done. You do have the legs.
And so,
I'm done with this for this week.
Great.
Join us next week.
That's good.
What if he murders me?
You're in Canada. How can he find you?
Listen, I post a lot of things online. People can easily find me.
That you do. You're really good about that. You know what we didn't have time for today, which I'm devastated about? My favorite yet to be tested segment, Jukebox That Musical.
I'm sorry, overdid it.
No, you know what though? I think this is good. This gives me more time because I had a basic structure today for the musical, for Brunettes, but I think I want to surprise you. I'm going to go super in depth and I'm going to come up with like intricate stories and characters and staging imagery for you. And then next week, I'm going to surprise our listeners and you with my production of Brunettes, the Michelle Branch, Vanessa Carlton mashup. The finale's already looking really good. It's going to be a mashup of You Set Me Free, Everywhere, All You Wanted, and Pretty Baby.
Oh my gosh. I cannot wait for that developmental lab. I cannot wait to not be cast in it. I cannot wait to hear about people not getting paid for it. I can't wait.
The whole thing takes place in Portland, so you'll be cast as like the gay barista.
The gay barista.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Where the two lesbians meet to get their non-fat cappuccinos.
Yes. Oh my God. That's it.
That's, yeah. And that's their meet cute. And that's all as far as I have planned so far. So yes. Join us next week when I find out where John exactly fits in Brunettes the Musical.
I can't wait. Cool. So that's all I had for today. I'm sorry that I offered nothing.
You offered quite a few things. If anything, you taught me fetish shaming, which is my new favorite term. I'm going to use it all the time.
Yeah, honestly. I think let's add it to the lexicon.
So thank you guys for joining us for Broadway Breakdown. This has been our second and more successful episode, I think. Thank you, John, for agreeing to record as early as 11 o'clock in the morning your time. It's been very gracious of you.
Honestly, I'm the saint of musical theater. I'm the martyr. I'm the Joan of Arc of musical theater, but not at the public.
No, I was about to say, you're not an Alex Timbers production. If anything, you're like I'm a Sam Gold production. You're a Trevor Nunn production.
Oh, I'll take it.
Yeah, we're both intellectual, dry, and a little kinky. So anyway, this has been another episode of Broadway Breakdown. Join us next week when we cover Brunettes the Musical, some new segments, hopefully, and John goes further with the foot fetishist, and maybe we can add some more terms to the lexicon.
Yes.
Until next time, this has been Broadway Breakdown. Let's pick a diva to close us out today.
Ooh, what diva do we want? I want... Ellen Page.
Ellen Page. Wait, Ellen Page.
Ellen Page isn't that
Elaine Page.
Elaine Page. Oh my God, I'm so wasted. No. Okay.
What? I was like, no. Ellen Juno. Juno don't sing. All right, Elaine Page. Okay. Well, we'll have Elaine Page close us out today.
I'm so dumb. Bye, everybody.
I'm gonna remove your gay card.
I know. I'm sorry.
Bye.
All right, close us out, Elaine.
Ellen.
Ellen.
Everybody's playing.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.